Carolina snowflake. Carolina snowflake. Carolina snowflake.
I'm Amanda.
I'm Jason. I'm Jason. Underwear pervert.
And we're back with another episode of the Carolina Snowflakes podcast. We are your hosts.
I'm Amanda.
And I'm Jason. And this week, we are going to talk about someone who John McCain had something to say about. You remember John McCain?
I do.
What did you think of John McCain? Was he a maverick?
He was a maverick. I mean, he was all right there at the very end.
Yeah. Yeah. John McCain. You have mixed feelings about John McCain, mm-hmm. is what you're saying.
Yeah.
I know I do.
Yeah.
He's the kind of guy, John McCain was the kind of guy who you're like, I don't know, he did some stuff that was cool. I feel bad for what happened to him in the war.
Mm-hmm.
But he also was a Republican and kind of shitty about some things.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in Congress for infinity years. So
he really was.
Yeah, he was there our whole lives.
Yeah.
So, John McCain said something about the guy we're going to talk about today. And the quote that John McCain said is, "This is the man who transformed the Republican Party from an Eastern elitist organization to the breeding ground for the election of Ronald Reagan."
Oh.
Yeah. The breeding ground, which is a great way to describe it. It makes it seem like some sort of a cesspool.
It sounds like an infestation.
Yes.
You need to call Terminex.
Yeah, and this man created the infestation that we then got Ronald Reagan from. So that's what John McCain had to say about this man.
Oh, good.
So that's who we're going to talk about this week, the man who John McCain thought created a breeding ground for Reagan. This man is a major reason for the big switch in the American South from Democrat to Republican. So, you know how things did the big swap?
Yeah, switcheroo.
This guy is a big part of the reason why, you know, traditionally the South had been very Democratic and mm-hmm. started to become Republican. It was from this guy.
Okay.
I still haven't said his name. He was a senator for the state of Arizona, and he also ran for president. He inspired a rule that psychologists shouldn't diagnose mental health issues without knowing the subject personally, and he created a special kind of underpants. The man we're going to talk about is Barry Goldwater.
Oh, yeah, so, okay.
Yeah, Barry Goldwater. Upon writing this episode, it was really funny. I was trying to think of what his name was, his birth name was, and I was like, what is Barry short for? And so I wanted to call him Barold.
Like Harold?
Yes.
Well, like Harry.
Yeah, if Harry is short for Harold, then Barry must be short for Barold.
I don't think that's right.
No, it's actually short for Baron.
Baron.
Yes.
Okay.
I didn't know that. Did you?
I would have guessed it.
You would have? Okay. Well, Baron Morris Goldwater was born on January 2nd, 1909 in Phoenix in what was at the time called the Arizona Territory. So when he was born, Arizona wasn't a state.
Oh, wow. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. His grandparents had been Polish Jews who immigrated to London and then to the United States and settled in what is now Arizona. They started Goldwater's department store and made a pretty good living. Barry himself didn't do so well in school and was sent to military school. He went to college for a year but dropped out, making him the most modern non-college graduate to be nominated by a major party for president of the United States.
Interesting.
So he's the most recent person that didn't graduate college that got nominated by either, you know, the Democrats or the Republicans.
So school just really wasn't his thing then.
No, it really wasn't his thing. And what I find interesting, their name was originally Goldwasser, but they did the thing.
Oh, the thing.
The anglicized thing when they moved to London and changed it to Goldwater.
I wonder how they chose Phoenix.
Well, from what I read, they actually originally moved to California because uh-huh. of the gold rush. And gold wouldn't work out so well, so they went a little bit east and settled in Arizona. But like I said, and at the time, this would have been the 1800s, Arizona wasn't a state, so it was free reign, and they opened a department store that did really well. In fact, it went through multiple generations of the Goldwater family. It's called Goldwater's Department Store.
Mm.
So they did pretty good there. But Barry, you know, he didn't do well in school. He got sent to military school, and then he dropped out of college. But World War, luckily for him, and our just like in G. Gordon Liddy, luckily World War II broke out, so it gave him a chance to do something. And he flew as a pilot, flying supplies to outposts from the United States to India, South America, Central Africa. He flew all over flying supplies during World War II. He never got in any major combat. He did fly some dangerous routes, but nothing ever happened, and he just flew supplies during World War II.
And he was actually the pilot?
Mm-hmm, he was a pilot.
Okay.
And he remained in the Air National Guard until 1967, and so he was a longtime National Guardsman.
Hmm.
So he even was in the National Guard while he was in office. So
well, that would have been well into his like late 50s.
Right, right. He did. Yeah, he stayed in a long time in the National Guard.
Huh. So yeah. That was something he was good at.
He was. He was. He was. He was a good pilot. He didn't crash, so he did better than John McCain.
Wow.
Yeah, sorry, John. But he did pretty good in that. And as a pilot, I mean, I assume he had to be pretty smart, or at least...
That's what I was getting at. Like, yeah. If he didn't do well in school as a kid, then dropped out of college, but then was still able to be a pilot, like...
And do a good job at it.
He must have been relatively intelligent.
I think he was. I think he had what we might call, like, military intelligence. Like, I think, you know, we've run into these people in these episodes before who they don't do so good at, like, traditional school, but when it comes to the military, they excel.
Mm.
I think maybe he was one of those kind of people, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, after World War II ended, Barry was running the department store, and it wasn't Barry's favorite thing to do, but he did a pretty decent job of it. Again, he's doing okay at things that he doesn't really love, so that's interesting. In 1947, Barry created something called Antsy Pants. This was a pair of white men's boxer shorts with pictures of red ants all over them. And it became a national sensation, a national fad. Antsy Pants blew up, and people loved to buy Antsy Pants.
Which, why?
I don't know. They thought it was cute.
Is it strictly just... the way it looked, or was it because they were comfortable?
No, it was just the way they looked. They just, in fact, I'm going to show you a photo of Antsy Pants so that you can maybe get a better grasp on this.
Okay.
So here's here's a picture of Antsy Pants. So there you have it.
Thank you.
What did you think of that? What did you think of that?
Well, first of all, he also made them for women.
Yeah, he had Antsy Panties too.
Uh huh.
Mm-hmm. That
and
was later.
They were, washable and made of nylon.
Mm-hmm. And they were just white boxers with red
they
pants.
Were referred to as luxurious. And the news headline said Antsy Pants Fad Sweeps Nation.
Antsy Pants Fad Sweeps Nation. So he made Antsy Pants.
Mm.
Which is a really weird thing to know. When people talk about Barry Goldwater, it almost never gets mentioned. It's interesting. It's not even in his Wikipedia that he made Antsy Pants, but you Google it and there's newspaper articles, there's Reddits. Like,
how is it not in his Wikipedia?
I don't know. Someone at Wikipedia dropped the ball and just didn't decide to mention Antsy Pants.
I'm like, we don't talk about that.
I mean, I guess he did a bunch of other things, so Antsy Pants isn't up there, but I put an eye up there.
To me, that's pretty important.
If you invent Antsy Pants, I want to know about it, is what I'm saying.
If you invent a thing that sweeps the nation
yeah.
as a fad, mm-hmm. people press against their junk.
Yeah. It was really interesting. I found an article from the New York Times about it, and he made these in Arizona, and this is in 1947.
Well, I think maybe the big deal was like the nylon part
yeah.
of it, because wasn't that kind of...
It was new.
Relatively mm-hmm. new at that point.
And I think people thought it was cute to have ants on there.
And they probably felt really nice.
Yeah. I mean, but you got to think, in 1947, to make a product in Arizona and have it do so well that it's advertised in New York, you're doing pretty good.
Also, they were, that ad that we saw from the newspaper clipping was like $2.50.
Yeah.
That's kind of pricey.
Yeah, I think for the time it was kind of pricey.
Yeah, for like one pair.
Fancy Antsy Pants.
Fancy Antsy Pants.
Yeah. So he made Antsy Pants. Yeah. It's very weird. It's just not what I'm expecting. If you talk about Barry Goldwater, you just don't expect Antsy Pants.
No, that's going to be... That's good to know, though, in case we're ever like watching Jeopardy and that comes up.
Well, but the problem is that now I can't think about anything else when I think about it.
I will never forget that fact, ever.
That Barry Goldwater made Antsy Pants. No, you won't. And anyone listening, you probably won't forget that either. It's just a thing you remember. So just 2 years after making Antsy Pants, old Barreled started to get political.
Did you call him Barreled?
I did. I called him Barreled. Old Barry, he started to get political, and he was elected to city council in 1949. So by now it's a state, and there's cities, and
he
gets elected to city council. This is where things about Barry start to get real weird. Barry was very supportive of integration in the military and even in local Phoenix public schools. This seems good, but also he was very outspoken against civil rights legislation on a federal level. So he was very supportive of it, but only locally, of like civil rights.
States' rights?
Yeah, kind of a states' right thing. Martin Luther King Jr. had this to say about Barry Goldwater. While not himself a racist, Mr. Goldwater articulates a philosophy which gives aid and comfort to the racists. So that's what MLK had to say about him. So that's a little sketchy, right?
Well, but what was his reasoning? How could you be supportive of one and not the other?
Yeah, it's going to be really confusing. And I knew that that was going to be a question. So all I can say is the only way for me to really explain this is just to push forward, and we will see more of his duplicitous nature, and he'll talk a little bit more about it.
Okay.
But I can't really summarize it because it doesn't make any sense.
Okay.
In the end. In 1952, Barry ran for Arizona senator as a Republican, and he barely won. Like, he won a narrow victory, but he did become senator in 1952 for Arizona. He was very critical of the Eisenhower administration, and he claimed that they were too liberal for being a Republican administration. So he's criticizing Eisenhower for not being Republican enough, or for being too left-wing, even though he was a Republican. In his first year as senator, he was responsible for desegregating the Senate cafeteria. But then he also fought against national laws that would have did the same for black folks in the South.
That's so weird.
Isn't it weird?
Yeah, I don't get it.
Yeah. So he's like, our cafeteria needs to be desegregated, but not a regular diner in South Carolina. And I don't understand why.
The only thing I can think of is that it really just was his opinion of federal government. Quote, overreach.
Yeah. Does that remind you of anything?
What do you mean?
Well, the concept of criticizing the federal government for federal overreach, but then supporting the same legislation for states.
That reminds me of most politicians.
Yeah. And most Republicans. Republican shitbags.
Yeah.
Like Barry Goldwater.
Right.
Yeah. So he's kind of pioneering this Republican shitbag argument of states' rights. And even though I think this is good, we shouldn't do it. Which is insane.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's the one, he's pioneering that. Sounds a little bit like Phyllis Schlafly, who we also know to do similar things. And I don't know, Ronald Reagan to do similar things, and Trump. It sounds just very Republican.
Well, isn't it also Arizona? Isn't that the state right now that's got that law from the 1800s banning abortions? And even the Republicans in Arizona are like, whoa now.
Yeah.
We
that's the thing. I find it interesting that he's from Arizona, where we've seen that kind of thing. Didn't Arizona go for Bernie, right? Like, and it was really weird that Arizona went for Bernie.
Arizona is a bizarre state.
Yeah, and part of the reason it's so bizarre is because of this guy we're talking about, because of fucking Barry Goldwater.
It's the Antsy Pants.
It's Antsy Pants. It got in Arizona and blew everyone's minds. Turned everyone into fucking weirdos. So I wrote, this is all very confusing. And luckily in 1960, Barry wrote a book called Conscience of a Conservative, which sounds like the worst book I've ever heard.
It's probably very short. Yeah. Right.
Good one. Yeah. In Conscience of a Conservative, he wrote a quote that sums up his stance better than I can sum it up. So this is a little bit, it's a couple of sentences. It's a little bit of a long quote. But this will sum up Barry's sort of take and give you, as best as I can, an idea of what he's saying, because it doesn't really make sense. And trigger warning, I'm going to say a word here that I normally don't say. But it's a quote. I believe that it is both wise and just for Negro children to attend the same schools as whites. And to deny them this opportunity carries with it strong implications of inferiority. I am not prepared, however, to impose that judgment of mine onto the people of Mississippi or South Carolina, or to tell them what methods should be adopted and what pace should be kept in striving towards this goal. That is their business, not mine. I believe that the problem of race relations, like all social and cultural problems, is best handled by the people directly concerned. Social and cultural change, however desirable, should not be affected by the engines of national power. So that was, that's Barry's quote on there. And I normally, yeah, I wouldn't say the sort of N-word there, but he said it. So, I mean, to be historically accurate, I felt like I should quote it.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that was his take.
That didn't clear anything up for me.
Yeah, it still doesn't make sense, right?
No.
He's just basically saying, like, it is good to move race relations forward, but we shouldn't make them
we
do
can't
it.
Force South Carolina to do that.
Or Mississippi, yeah.
Yeah, because look at them.
It's such a weird take, right? Like,
it's just, yeah, it's weird.
It's super weird. By 1962, Barry was ready to run for president in the 1964 election.
Wow.
So he'd been working his way up. It's interesting. He actually was an amateur radio guy, and he was into, like, amateur radio. And so he had been creating radio shows and touring around and making himself pretty well known as a senator. So he wasn't one of those senators that you never hear from. He was one of the senators that you hear from constantly. Like, you know, like, yeah, like Ted Cruz. You know how some senators just feel the need to be all up in your shit?
Yeah, and they pop up all over.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
he was one of them.
What are you doing?
He was one of them. And I think he was one of the first senators to really be like that, to be out in people's asses in the whole country, not just Arizona, which is annoying. And I wish he didn't do that. So he was planning on running in the 1964 election, which would have made him running, presumably, against John F. Kennedy, JFK.
Yeah.
They had both served in the Senate for 8 years and had been pretty good friends, actually. Barry Goldwater and JFK were pretty close. He and JFK had even agreed that they were going to have a civil election and they were going to campaign and travel together.
What?
And do, like, Lincoln Douglas style debates all over the country and do no mudslinging. So they were like, we're going to be civil about running against each other.
Okay.
So they didn't agree with each other on everything, but they were civil, and they did think that, like, mudslinging was bad. But you probably know that on November 22nd, 1963, JFK was assassinated.
Mm-hmm.
So when JFK died, he wouldn't be the one running in 1964. It would now go to Lyndon B. Johnson. And Barry and Lyndon B. Johnson did not get along at all. Barry had hated Lyndon Johnson in the Senate. And so he went from running from with, you know, running against JFK to running against somebody he hated. And so,
I guess they had to cancel that tour.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
Well, they had started doing some, but yeah, they had to cancel it after JFK died. Barry was very sad about JFK's assassination, and he was pissed off about running. And I think this caused Barry to swing harder to the right. He now became a militant anti-communist.
Oh.
Which is where we're going to have to talk about how this ties into what we've talked about before. Because the John Birch Society got big behind Barry Goldwater at this time.
Oh.
So now we have the John Birch Society and what we talked about in our last episode, Phyllis Schlafly. Mm. She shows up here. This is where old Phyllis shows up in
of
Barry's life.
Of course she does.
Yeah, and she's like, I love you, Barry. You're great, and your anti-communism ways are great. And the John Birch Society loved him and pushed Barry Goldwater, like, really hard. So that's how Barry got a lot of support, because he did this sort of shift from being this weird duplicitous sort of pro/anti-segregation guy, he turned into, like, communism is the devil. We need to get rid of communists. And as we've talked about extensively on this show, that's usually code for racism. Like,
right.
Like, it's most of the time, if you're a militant anti-communist, it means you're a racist.
Right.
If you need more information on that, we've done episodes on the John Birch Society. I did one called Coke Money. That goes into the racism of the John Birch Society. Our entire Phyllis Schlafly thing, we kind of hit on this JBS sort of Nazi adjacent bullshit that they call anti-communism. And what's funny is, even the Republicans at this time knew you couldn't, even we talked about it with Phyllis, you couldn't come out as a John Birch Society person at this time, because even they knew it was toxic, which I think is interesting. So just like Phyllis, they had secrets. Barry had secret support from the John Birch Society. He was a secret member, you know? And I think that's very telling. I think that if even the Republicans in 1962 think that your organization is too toxic, then that's pretty bad.
Right.
And that was the case with the John Birch Society. So he's another Birch guy. Great. Once he secured the nomination is when Barry really started saying some crazy shit. He was very into using nuclear weapons and even said that we should have used nukes in Vietnam to get rid of the trees that were in the way. He wanted to nuke the trees.
Nuke the jungle.
Uh-huh, in Vietnam. That was what he wanted to do. He insisted that nuclear weapons should be used the same way as other weapons. And he wanted field commanders in war to be able to deploy nuclear weapons without presidential consent.
What?
Yeah. He thought the fact that our enemies know that it takes presidential authority to launch a nuke defeats the purpose of nukes. And so we needed to just allow military commanders to nuke whatever the fuck they wanted.
To just have it available in their arsenal.
Yeah, he was outspokenly pro-nuke.
Wow.
And if you remember, Phyllis Schlafly did the same thing. Mm. She was also very pro-nuke. We should just nuke shit.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. G. Gordon Liddy, who we also talked about in our Republican shitbag series, also thought we should just nuke things.
I wonder what that was about.
It's a Republican thing.
Well, it's also, I mean, it's got to be an era. Like a,
yeah.
Was that from the whole like Cold War?
Yeah, I guess we should just nuke shit. But I mean, this by now was the 60s. Like it was more Vietnam.
Yeah.
It was the late 60s. Just, so it was more Vietnam than
it's just
Russia.
Unusual, I feel, to have that be such a consistent, like across the board sort of ideology amongst these groups of people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, where is that coming from?
Well, I think it's fascinating because this is all the people who set the stage for the Republicans who were in charge after 9/11 and who are insistent that we should go to war with countries that didn't have anything to do with 9/11, right? Like,
right.
That mentality carried on. And I think that's part of why I'm doing this series is to show that these people who we've been talking about in the series set the stage for what happened. And why we're in the clusterfuck we're in now.
It's very American.
Mm-hmm. Just like, nuke the trees, baby.
Yeah, just if it bothers you, just...
Fucking nuke it.
Nuke it.
Yeah. Yeah. So on October 6, 1964, Barry Goldwater said this in a speech. Forced integration is just as wrong as forced segregation.
In a, like a presidential speech?
In a presidential speech.
Okay.
So it's just as bad to force people to integrate as it is to force people to segregate, which is absolutely batshit crazy.
Well, it also doesn't really mean anything.
Well, yeah, it goes against human nature. I mean, like, we tend to not be segregated as people. You have to force us to be segregated, hence the rules on segregation in schools. That was forced.
Mm-hmm.
But integration happens naturally. It's just what happens. If you bring black people around, they integrate. If you bring, Hispanic people around, they integrate. We know this from society. If you look at Chinatown, for example, in a lot of big cities, they'll have a Chinatown. That's integrated, right? They're not separate. They're not like you're not allowed in Chinatown if you're not Chinese, right? Like white people can go there and buy whatever. And so my argument here is that integration isn't forced. It's something that happens naturally. Segregation is what has to be forced. But he had a different take. He thought that they were both equally bad.
Well, that's kind of the same stance that he had had as a senator.
Right.
Where he said, like,
right,
I'm not going to tell. I don't think the government should tell other places what to do.
Right. Except when it comes to the cafeteria in the Senate for some reason.
But just in the Arizona Senate.
Yeah. Weird.
Yeah.
This is a very fucking hard, like, as much research as I did on Barry, I can't figure out that stance. I can't wrap my head around it. It must have been of the time, maybe. Maybe there's just, I just will never
or
understand.
Or it's just him.
Yeah, or he was just crazy. I think maybe that's part of it.
Yeah.
He was pretty crazy. So, speaking of him being nuts, I want to get the facts of this next part straight because we're going to wade into some complicated water here. So, I'm going to read from Wikipedia to explain what happened next. Because there's some numbers and some stats that I want to make sure I got right. So I didn't want to paraphrase this part. So this is a quote. Before the 1964 election, Fact magazine, published by Ralph Ginsberg, ran a special issue titled The Unconscious Conservative, a very special issue on the mind of Barry Goldwater. The two main articles contended that Goldwater was mentally unfit to be president. The magazine supported this claim with the results of a poll of board-certified psychiatrists. Fact had mailed questionnaires to 12,356 psychiatrists, receiving responses from 2,417, of whom 1,189 said Goldwater was mentally incapable of holding office as president. Most other respondents declined to diagnose Goldwater because they had not clinically interviewed him, but said that although not psychologically unfit to preside, Goldwater would be negligent as president.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's where we get the infamous Goldwater rule. The Goldwater rule was something that we've talked about a little bit before, where it states that essentially that psychologists shouldn't psychoanalyze anybody that they haven't seen clinically.
Yeah.
And that's where that comes from. It comes from this article that basically said he was too crazy to be president from a lot of psychologists.
But was that, were there people who really thought that?
Yes.
Okay. See, I don't know. I wasn't there.
Yeah. Like, yeah. No,
I don't know. Like, I'm assuming that this didn't just happen out of thin air, that there must have been through media, a portrayal, a portrait of this man behaving or speaking in a certain way that some members of the public seem to think was mentally unwell.
A lot of people. Well, there's a couple of things. We've already talked about them. The first, saying that we should nuke trees in Vietnam. Even then, people thought that was crazy. Like that.
Oh, yeah.
That
it
didn't come off well at the time, even then. Like,
right.
People went, well, that's an unstable person to say we should nuke trees. Secondly, I think the dissonance we've been having most of this episode with him with integration, I think everyone saw it the same way we see it now. It's like, this dude's nuts. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Okay.
Like,
see, it's so hard to know because, like, that was 60 years ago.
Right.
And so it's hard to know, like, well, were things just that different then? And this was normal?
They weren't that different. I mean, in the sense that especially saying that you should be able to nuke things without presidential approval was seen as crazy even then.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And also being so duplicitous about segregation and integration, like, I think everyone was confused. Just as much as we are going over this, I think they were at the time. Like, a lot of what you read about Barry was like, people were like, what the fuck? What is he saying?
He was just a total nut.
Yeah, it doesn't seem... It seems like he's unhinged, like there's something wrong, because he's not making any sense. His stances on things aren't logical, because later on, he will have a very pro-gay marriage stance, a very pro-legalization of marijuana stance, but also claim to be a staunch Republican and hate communism.
So it doesn't make any sense. Like libertarian.
Yes, he's a huge influence on the libertarians. In fact, libertarianism kind of became a thing partially because of Goldwater. So
wow, thanks Barold.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. I was gonna get there later, but you're smart, and so you got there now.
Whoops.
Is that he is part of the founding of what is modern day libertarianism. That was him and the John Birch Society. That was their whole thing. And so I think it's even to people back then was didn't make sense, was hard to square that circle. Like, wait a minute, I'm so confused. So you want gay people to get married, but you also want to nuke trees. Like, that's such a weird stance to have.
Not just nuke trees. He wants people in the military to just have...
To just be able to decide to nuke trees.
Easy access.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. It's weird, right? So after the election, Barry Goldwater sued the publisher of the magazine that wrote about him being unfit for office, Fact Magazine. He sued the editor, the magazine, and the owning company for libel and a case called Goldwater versus Ginsburg. And although the jury awarded Goldwater only $1 in compensatory damages against all three defendants, it did award him punitive damages of $25,000 against Ginsburg and $50,000 against Fact Magazine Incorporated.
Ouch.
So they were like, look, you get $1 in compensation for the trial, but they did libel and slander you a little bit.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, and that's where we get what we now do, the Goldwater rule. And it's considered in bad taste to psychoanalyze someone you haven't seen.
Yeah, clinically. you would never do that now. Yeah.
So the election happened, and it didn't go well for Barry, as he won only 6 states: Arizona, Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, and South Carolina.
Oh, there's South Carolina again.
Yeah. Yeah, those were all southern states, and then Arizona.
Yeah.
And if you keep in mind, a key thing to remember about this, though, is that these southern states were very Democrat at the time. This was the time when those states were still heavily entrenched Democrat areas.
Right.
And for most of them, he was the first Republican to win the popular vote since Reconstruction. So we hadn't, that wasn't a thing. Since Reconstruction, the South was all Democrat. Mm-hmm. And he turned them. In fact, he was the first one to turn Georgia. No one had ever managed to turn Georgia to Republican until Barry Goldwater.
Wow.
So we can thank him for Brian Kemp, the current governor of Georgia who sucks a lot of ass. So thanks, Barold.
Thanks, Barold.
And now we get, he remained in the Senate forever. And when I say forever, he remained in the Senate until 1987.
That's a long time.
1987.
So he was almost 80.
Mm-hmm. And he had originally got in the Senate back in 1952. So from 52 to 87, he was a fucking senator.
Wow.
Yeah. In fact, he was followed up by none other than John McCain.
Oh, right. Yeah.
John McCain was the person who ended up following Barry. And he had mixed feelings about Barry, but he seemed to like him. John McCain was pro, I mean, I think to win as a Republican and a senator in Arizona, you had to be pro Barry Goldwater. He was there for 30 fucking years.
Mm-hmm.
So when John McCain replaced him, you know, he went off and kind of did his own thing. He rode a little bit. He would go around traveling, promoting other Republicans, and was a sort of a famous Republican figure
mm-hmm.
after he got out. But he retained most of his duplicitous stances all the way up until the end in 1998. When he died from Alzheimer's disease. Mm. So Barry was crazy for like almost 100 years. He was born in 1902 and he died in 98.
Oh, gosh.
So this dude made it 96 years.
I thought you said he was born in 1909.
I thought it was, oh, maybe it was 1909. Yes, you're right. 1909. So he lived to be 89.
I don't think so.
1909 to 98?
98. So he'd be 91.
91. Fuck.
Math is hard.
Yeah.
Well, you are a product of South Carolina.
Yeah. See, I'm a product of South Carolina education. That's why that whole thing got fucked up. I would have edited this out of this episode, but I'm going to leave it in now. It's proof that Barry Goldwater fucking ruined my education and made me suck at math. So there we go. That's the legacy of Barry Goldwater. I'm an idiot and can't do math. Because of him. So thanks, Barry. Thanks, Barold.
Thanks, Barold.
Yeah. So that's the, in brief, I didn't want to go too much into this one because he just kept doing the same shit. Like, this was the life of Barry Goldwater. Like, that's all there really is to say. He did things in politics, but none of them really, nothing really mattered. That was the important, you know, steps on Barry Goldwater. And like I said, he's the reason the South is Republican now. He's the reason why the John Birch Society, another part of the John Birch Society, being all up in Republican politics, creating libertarianism, and just being a downright Republican shitbag.
Actually, now that I think about it, I think you were right.
What?
I'm the one who failed.
Yeah, you see, and you went to North Carolina schools.
Right, because if it was 1909, 1998, that would have been 89.
Yeah, that's what I said.
You were right. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, see, I just went along with it because I went to South Carolina schools and we're that
just
dumb.
And I'm from North Carolina and we just always assume we're better.
That we, you know better. So the end of this episode was kind of a train wreck, but I'm going to leave it.
I really
because
hope no one ever makes us math.
It's been pretty funny. I certainly enjoyed telling you the story. Did you learn anything? Is there anything you would...
Antsy pants.
I mean, that's the real reason I did the whole thing.
Right.
This whole episode was just an excuse to talk about antsy pants.
I wonder if you could find some on, like, eBay.
I'm sure you could. But they probably wouldn't be original, right? Like, you could just find a remake.
No, I want originals.
Original.
I want
Barry
OG
Goldwater
fancy pants. Yeah. Or antsy pants.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, he sucked.
Mm.
He sucked, but in weird ways. He found new ways to suck and make me hate him, which I find interesting. Because, like I said, I'm very supportive of his pro-gay marriage stance, his pro-marijuana stance. I support those things. But he was taking it from a weird anti-communist Republican libertarian stance and not from where I'm sitting. You know, I don't think he would have been like Yeah. I think he probably would have said states should legalize gay marriage one at a time or whatever.
I wonder what would have happened if JFK hadn't have been assassinated and he and...
I think everything would have been different.
They would have been able to continue their...
Yeah.
Their tour.
From what I've read and seen about him, that's when he made the turn. Like, JFK getting assassinated and him having to deal with someone, Lyndon B. Johnson, who he didn't like, was like him... It was like a switch flipped in his brain, and now all of a sudden I'm on team crazy. So that seems to have been what happened. But I think he was really important in the sense that the Goldwater rule is something that gets mentioned. I'm sure even if you don't know anything about Barry Goldwater, you've heard the term and you're familiar with the concept.
Sure.
And I also think that he was really important in the sense that, you know, his we should do things state by state and then I shouldn't tell South Carolina what to do. It's very reminiscent of the abortion thing they're trying to do now, where they're trying to make the argument that, like, we should let the states be in charge of abortion and then we can, you know, each state can figure it out on its own. You know what I mean? And they're trying to do that. That's a tactic that they've been using because it's easier for them to control.
What happened to the department store?
The department store? So they went through three generations of people running that department store until it shut down.
Oh.
So Barry's kid ended up running it.
I was going to ask it if he had family.
Yeah, he did. He did. I mean, he had a wife and kids, and his son, Barry Goldwater Jr., actually got involved in politics. So he's a whole other story. But if you wanted to look into Barry Goldwater Jr., he also was involved in Arizona politics. He ran the store until, I don't know, I don't remember exactly what year, but he ran the department store until it shut down. So he was the third generation to run that store.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's, there you have it. And if you want to learn more, just look up Barry Goldwater Jr. because he's crazy too.
Barreled.
Yeah.
Goldwater.
As I call him, barreled. So next week on the Carolina Snowflakes podcast, I plan on doing another 4chan fortune because that was really, really fun last week and I want to do that again. So we're going to do that again next week. I have more Republican shitbags in the barrel to be brought up later. But I think I want to do another 4chan fortune. That was a fun episode. So I hope you learned something. I hope you didn't know the things about, you didn't know about Antsy Pants. I can almost guarantee. I can almost guarantee you didn't know about Antsy Pants. So, yep, that's our third Republican shitbag, old Barry Goldwater. I appreciate everybody listening. We got a website, carolinasnowflakes.com. You can email me at carolinasnowflakes@gmail.com. And we really appreciate you listening. Tune in next week for another 4chan fortune. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Carolina Snowflake, Carolina Snowflake.
I'm Amanda.
I'm Jason.